You are not to discuss this matter amongst yourselves.
We don't submit reports or ask approval for specific operations, if that's what you mean. We are an autonomous department.
Any questions?
Broadcasting from an abandoned subspace relay orbiting Risa, this is Section 31, gathering intelligence for you on Star Trek CCG. Now reporting in, operatives Dan and Rogue.
All right, there we go. That's much better.
Oh, that's much better.
All right, well then, let's start the show properly. Welcome to Section 31, episode number 288. I'm Dan Hammond.
And I am still Rogue Schindler.
Very good. This week, we've got, well, that was probably the most interesting thing we'll talk about this week. we'll talk about...
I can't disagree with that.
Yeah, we'll talk about a weird episode of the animated series. There were some little bits of 1E rules that were set up today, and... we can't even look ahead to next week. We'll be looking ahead to 2 weeks when we have our local Peldor Joy tournament. But there's not a lot going on right now, unfortunately. So why don't we, what do you want to talk about first? You want to talk about first edition? Or do you want to talk about Peldor Joy?
Let's...
animated series. Boy.
Well, I was going to say get the episode out of the way.
All right. Out of the way is a good way to put it. Yeah. All right. So this was an episode called BEM. I was reading a bit of the notes in Memory Alpha, and it sounds like this was something that was pitched for season 3, but didn't get made because it would have been difficult to do without animation.
Because they couldn't make an independent torso rock around with little floaty arms coming out of it,
or a head float around, or an arm go off that way. Yeah. So there's a guy who has a honorary commander. Is assigned to the Enterprise from some planet that apparently is important, that the Federation needs to impress.
So important that we've never heard of them ever again.
Yeah, exactly. So apparently he's been riding along on the Enterprise and staying in his quarters for mission after mission. And finally, there's a dangerous mission, and he decides that he's going to invite himself along with the away team. And now... I'm thinking back. I think they beamed down 6 people, right? Was it 5 or 6?
Around 5 or 6. Yeah.
Yeah, and then see, I'm remembering the 5. It was Scotty and somebody else, plus Kirk and Spock, plus Bem. And I thought that was a 6th person, and I could never figure out what happened to the other guy. Anyway,
Sulu was there.
Sulu was with Scotty?
Because they left Uhura in command, which was pretty awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so we'll go with that. They beam down, and immediately Bem just starts making trouble, runs off, gets himself captured by the natives, who they apparently are deploying research modules to monitor them. Is that what they were doing?
It was unclear.
That's kind of what I got the feeling from, that they were going to deploy these things and then get out of the way and be all prime directively, you know, don't get involved, don't be seen, avoid them at all costs.
It was very much something like that. Like, I just thought they were going to go down and watch them, but deploying something to do so may also be makes a good deal of sense as well. But
so he obviously has transporter skill. Because he screwed up the transporters and made it close enough that Scotty thought they were beaming down to the right spot. Unfortunately, they beamed down Kirk and Spock over the water, and he immediately jumps in the water. And as he's floating there, as you said, his torso separates, and these two little spindly arms come out of it, and they walk over underwater and do a little switcheroo on Spock and Kirk's communicators and phasers. He must have a very high pickpocket score.
Yeah, that doesn't really do it justice, because it's not like his torso stays where it is. His legs walk away, some skinny little arms come out of what look like empty pants. And as you say, pickpocket Kirk and Spock. It's so creepy.
Apparently, we find out later on that he was replacing them with facsimiles that don't actually work, and he put his in his pocket. Anyway, they get out of the water, and he says, "Don't do that." Kirk says, "Don't do that again." He said he had this weird. It was very reminiscent of someone else, and I can't figure out who it is. Referring to himself as this one, and might have been a Barabel from New Jedi Order. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, the Gand used to do that all the time, too. Yeah, the Barabel.
Yeah. Anyway, it was very distracting. But, you know, interesting. Very different. It was different enough that it was noticeable. Very, very alien. They wander about the planet. They know that it's... The life is very new for the geologic age of the system, which, you know, is an interesting tidbit later on that'll come into play. They run into the lizard creatures. No, he runs off, and the aboriginal lizard creatures capture him. He splits his head off, and it floats away through the thorn bushes or whatever, and Kirk and Spock have to go around. It was very creepy. Floating heads are never... So not only is he made up of parts that can come apart, they also can telekinesis themselves and float around and operate underwater. And this is just a weird alien, that's for sure. Yeah?
Apparently he was a colony being.
Sure. Colonies can float. All right, very good.
Yes.
Maybe his head was just super buoyant. It was filled with, like, helium, and they can regulate that. Sure.
Like an airhead?
Yeah, exactly. That would... Anyway. So they get captured. Kirk and Spock are going to go rescue him, and they bungle the attempt, and all of a sudden they're captured. And they're under these wooden things that it looks like Spock could just reach down and just throw off of them. Right?
But I am only a Vulcan, Captain.
there were a lot of very weird statements throughout this.
Very.
Like, was it when the torches were up and Kirk says, uh-oh, or something like that.
I think I knew this was going to be a bad episode when, like, the very first scene is them briefing this mission, sitting around the conference table, and Kirk is very, very explicit about, all right, this is a very dangerous planet, and we don't know what could happen here, and we're under very strict orders not to get involved, so we have to strictly adhere to the Pride Directive. We have to be very careful and make sure nobody gets hurt. Nobody act like a hero. And I was like, you've just described every anti-Kirk thing I can possibly think of. The next thing he's going to say is everybody keep it in the pants. Nobody, you know, have any dealings with any local sexy beings.
You know, those cages they were in, I gotta go back to that, because they were just like tied with leather. I mean, they didn't have they had their fake communicators. They could have just, you know, broken them and just cut their
hacked them out. Yeah,
there was a lot going on. Anyway, so they have a conversation with Bem, and Bem's like, well, you guys aren't very smart, you got captured, this is my observation, and you guys are awful. So Kirk says, you know what, you got us here, give me back my phaser. And was this another time when his legs just walk out and hand the things back? That was just super creepy.
Yep. He just like comes apart and walks through the cage.
We did get a good fascinating from Spock. That was good.
Yes.
That was very, very well done. And then so they shoot their way out, and the natives are coming, and all of a sudden Uhura starts telling them with flashing lights, what are you guys doing on my planet? And it took me a long time to realize that was supposed to be some other being and not Uhura, because it was Nichelle Nichols doing the voice, and it was just a little bit too close. It just sounded like Uhura floating in the clouds, you know. Didn't they have, like, voice synthesizers or anything? I guess not. Or, you know.
She was kind of, like, ethereal, and her voice was a bit deeper than usual.
How about other actors? Couldn't they? Okay.
Yeah, that's the real trick.
All right. The godlike creature says, stop what you're doing. I'm making your phasers not work. And they're back in the cage again, right?
Right.
All right. So now there's the up on the ship. They're trying to figure out what's going on. They had beamed back up Sulu and Scotty. And there's this some kind of interference pattern moving about the planet. It turns out that this was this godlike creature who is, you know, keeping track of her children, which are the natives. They finally use... Spock says, hey, we can put our communicators in series and it'll break through the so okay, I'm imagining, all right, well, you gotta pull them apart and do all this stuff, and Kirk throws the communicator, and like a half second later Spock throws it back to him, and they're just gonna pancake together.
I thought the same thing. I was like, all right, there'll be like time passes or something. And it's literally hand across, hand back, go. I was like, wow, I didn't know your communicators could do that.
Yeah, they must be made to do that, because all he did was just go click and they were ready to go, like Lego bricks.
Yeah.
And there was no payoff. Well, Chris Fox says something like, they're going to fail very quickly, Captain. And yeah, Kirk just keeps talking, and you know, as he's wont to do, and they never fail for the rest of the episode, so it doesn't matter. He managed to break through the interference. Scotty comes down with a bunch of armed... before this, Bem said, "You guys are losers, and I'm leaving," right? He turned into parts and just kind of scattered?
Yeah.
All right.
He says, you rely too much on your technology. That's his whole thing. He's like, you guys need... He swapped them out because he thinks you rely too much on it. You should find other ways of settling your disputes or solving your problems. But if you were going to... You know, I'm not going to belittle myself to doing that as he undoes himself and floats through the cage. But if you want to belittle yourself, then here you go. And he gives them back their...
Right. That's how they get their comlinks back.
They decide to try and reason. Spock says, well, let's reason with this greater being, since she clearly is protecting her natives. And that's how they get through the interference.
That's
he
right.
says,
yes, that's what they were looking
I'm
for.
Very sorry. You know, we didn't know. It was one of the more reasonable, again, very out of character, one of the more reasonable, diplomacy acts that Kirk has ever done. I'm sorry. We didn't know. Let us go, and we will get the hell out of Dodge. We're very sorry.
Yes.
And she says, okay, I'll let you contact your ship.
Mm-hmm. And that's when they call up.
But instead of doing that.
Yeah, instead of beaming up, they said, you know what, send down a security detail and send them down with high-powered tricorders that can search for this this random goner, this guy from Pandro. And so a bunch of security guys beam down, and Kirk's, says, all right, now... we're very under rules. We can't shoot them up anymore. So set your phasers to the minimum stun setting, and don't use them unless you absolutely have to. And three scenes later, the security detail is just shooting everyone. It's just there's spears flying around, and they just pull up and start shooting everybody. At that point, we notice that Bem has been captured again, right? Because he's off to the side.
Yeah.
The flashing lights.
Physically holding him.
Yeah, the flashing lights of Uhura, the godlike voice comes down again and says, you guys are still here. I told you guys to leave. And Kirk says, well, we had to get our guy. We got to protect our own just like you protect your own. I think we can leave now and everyone will be happy because we found the guy. And she says, well, you found the guy? And he says, yes, we found the guy. And they beam up.
To which Uhura very reasonably does not say, why didn't you just say that in the first place?
Yeah. So there's some commentary between they beam up. There's some commentary between Bem and Kirk. Bem apologizes. He said something to the effect of, "You did that very well." Oh no, this is before they beam up. He says, "I am a poor judge of character, and I must erase myself from existence or dislocate or whatever he's going to do as a colony being to no longer be a person." And flashy lights, godlike Uhura lady says, you shouldn't do that because then, you wouldn't have learned anything from your mistake. You should go on and otherwise your mistake is meaningless, which is a good lesson,
Yeah.
Don't fall on your own sword by, after you make one mistake. You learn from it, you go on. All right. They all beam up. They have another little side discussion about what was going on, and then they get a, a comm from the planet, which is the godlike Uhura, which is just weird because she's the one who answered it. So they were right next to each other. And that was just really, by that point I got you could tell the difference, but it was just still confusing. And the godlike creature says, hey, go, you've learned something today. You've progressed. You should be proud. And Kirk says, yeah, we'll put up buoys. No one will ever bother you again. And she's, gives them a high five and they take off. And we never hear anything about this Pandro creature again. His motivations were never really clear. They talk about that Kirk and Spock are asking him during the episode, are you trying to report back to your people about what's going on here? And he says, nah, my people don't care about me. which is just weird. There are a lot of there are a lot of oddball premise things missing that probably could have been tightened up a little bit. That was one reading some notes again on Memory Alpha. It looks like Roddenberry took the story and added a bunch of weird things to it, like the whole godlike creature was all him adding it in toward the end, and the writer was very much not on board with that, but just because, you know, it's something they do a lot, right?
Yeah.
Just weird. Just very weird.
And, like, the whole, you get to the end, and Bem is like, oh, and it turns out this one is as to an eggling as to you. And you're like, wait, so does that mean, like, he was a kid the whole time, and that's why he's such a schmuck?
No, they had just said, we're all like children. And then he said, well, that this one is like an eggling. I thought that was a comparison between them being young and him being young. But still, just, wow.
There was some major... This is another one of those where I got to the end and I was like, well, now I feel a little bad about how much I hate the rest of this episode, because the ending was kind of all right. Like, I could see where they were trying to get to, but it was like a couple of those awkward episodes of My Little Pony that I dislike, where, well, this is a really dumb thing for this character to be doing, but I understand that they have to take it to the most extreme possible so that the kids will understand the lesson of, this is not what you're supposed to do, you're supposed to accept blah because blah, and then you'll be friends and everything will be okay. It's like they have to make this as simple as possible for the kids to get it.
Yeah, I very this, much... It's an excellent premise. I like the idea of an observer who screws things up so he can observe differently than they were expecting. You know, he was expecting
except that's every observer in Star Trek.
Yeah. Okay.
Literally.
Yeah. I guess you're right. All right. So. I have to. I think this fits very well in with the animated series, which is not a compliment.
Yes, I agree. There were just, you know, everybody acting out of character, which in this case was like doing good things because they were out of character, but doing them in extremely dumb ways. You know, there was a good point about, you rely too heavily on your technology. And it's like, okay, cool. That was a good idea that they kind of threw out there and then just kind of let flounder. You know, it could have easily have hit home a little better. You know, him being stupid for the sake of being stupid, what didn't turn really... I never really got the sense that he actually acknowledged, I'm doing all these dumb things because I want to see how you react to them. It very much felt like, well, I'm trying to get you into situations where you react to see how you react, but I don't really know how to do that because I'm an idiot.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there was a lot of that going around. All right. You know, well, I don't have much else. Yeah. This is exactly the episode that I was, this is exactly the quality of episode I was most expecting and least hoping to see.
Yeah. I did like the highlight where, you know, Kirk and Spock get separated and they're running off to what's his name, and Scotty and Sulu and the other schmoes are like, well, what do we do? And they're like, oh, well, they've got separated and we can't get a hold of them. And Scotty's like, we should go look for them. And Uhura's like, no, bitches, we have very explicit orders that if we get separated and we can't get in contact, everybody beams up and then we reassess the situation. I know you want to go after him, but this is what we're supposed to do. So come back up here and we'll regroup.
Yep.
And they're like, yes, ma'am. Here we go. That was very badass.
Very good. Yes. I think if you were going to pull an Uhura, this would be one of the ones that you'd, you know, this would be one of her good episodes.
Yeah.
Very, very, good character. As bad as some of the other characters were portrayed, hers was very well done as, you know, third in command or whatnot.
And then we have an AI for God.
Yes, indeed.
Another.
All right. Well, shall we move on to the first edition update?
Sure.
All right.
With that pain out of the way. So not a lot this month, but a couple of important distinctions. I'm going to go from the bottom up since they're from the least impactive.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds like a plan.
Most semantic.
Right. So, well, bottom up of the article or bottom up of the...
Of the article.
All right. So, rules to clarify interactions between Mirror Quadrant and Alpha Quadrant versions of the same location. So, apparently there was some issues with Bajor and Mirror Bajor. Since we cut out the Mirror Quadrant in bold, now it just has, at least I could be making stuff up, but I believe the decision was made for mirror locations. They don't have to say Mirror Quadrant in the location text anymore. The icon is enough.
As long as they have the icon.
Exactly.
Okay.
Because that's a lot of real estate that we can use for something else. So
yeah,
I believe this was to clarify, because if we put a page where it doesn't say Mirror Quadrant, they're not the same location. They're mirror versions of the same location. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you were trying to abuse that for cards that say, Pajor on them as if they were the same location, then by the same rule, you wouldn't be able to play with both of them.
Oh. You know what? This also applies to something else.
What's that?
Well, so...
what's a multidimensional transporter device?
No. So if you've got something that says it plays on... I don't know, Vulcan. You can't play that on the mirror version of Vulcan unless it had the Mirror Quadrant icon represented somewhere on that card.
Okay, that makes sense.
Unless it's a mirror-themed card.
So cards that specifically say, like, plays to Bajor
exactly.
have to actually play to Bajor.
Right.
They have to play to the Bajor that matches whatever quadrant.
So I think that means you can't play Falter Pawn on Mirror Vulcan.
Right? Sure.
Okay. That will also have implications in not the next set, but the next set.
Where there's a Mirror Vulcan.
Actually, I was thinking about a different thing. Well, the first set was Mirror DS9.
Yeah, Starfleet.
And then Mirror TOS. And then mirror Starfleet.
Yeah.
Well, there may be a mirror Starfleet thing that creates issues with having cards played on it that don't specifically reference. all right, I've said too much.
Mirror Earth. All right.
All right. Next up, changes to what constitutes a capture related card. So apparently, the capture related card list was unmanageable. So now we have any card whose game text downloads, nullifies, or modifies a card which meets any of the above criteria. Specified by the title is also a capture related card. Man, what I wouldn't give for a big long just list of capturing related cards. Is that?
Yeah.
But I, you know what? I bet our database does that.
Yeah, that would make sense. The deck builder, you just go in and click capture related, and just make sure it adheres to the new rules.
Yeah, and that way you could just get everything at once. You know, when you click on the deck builder, it doesn't actually show you the search engine. Let's see. First edition. Card group, probably. Capture-related card. Search. How many do you think we're going to get? 34.
Whoa, that's at least twice what I was going to say.
The first bunch are dilemmas. But that's not bad. Holding Cell Door, Fajr's Gallery, a bunch of good stuff's on here. All right. So, that's a good one. And last, a small change to the stopping rule so you can stop ships where stopped, not just move them. This lets cards like Make It So, as well as a new KCA fun work like intended. So, your ship will be staffed if all your people are stopped. So, if you have something that requires you to have a staffed ship at the end of your turn, even if everybody's stopped, it's still staffed, so you still qualify for maybe a card draw or something. Makes sense?
Yeah. So that's, I feel like that's what it always should have been. That's always how it was intended. You know, you have people there that can staff the ship. They're not going to move the ship, but it's a ship that's staffed. They're just out of actions this turn. So that makes a good deal more sense for things like Make It So and Pride of the Fleet.
Yes. All right. Very good. Yeah, I've got I've got nothing else. Hey, I was wrong.
No.
So, Crossover has Vulcan in it.
Ah, there you go.
Jeez, you got me think I was going doing something I wasn't supposed to. All right, very good. All right. I don't know if we've got anything else to talk about. Hey, you know, I ordered something on Amazon this morning, and it just showed up a few minutes ago. That was what the door knock was.
Really?
Yeah.
It was,
I got Amazon Prime, and it said free delivery today, and it showed up.
I do love that. I every now and then I'll order something, and I'll see that pop up. Like,
yeah.
You know, if you order X amount of dollars more stuff, you could get this today. And I'm like, show me something else that qualifies so I can buy something else. But they don't, that's not really, I think they just added that as a search filter.
Yeah, this came from Las Vegas, and I ordered it at like 10 o'clock this morning.
That's pretty cool. Living in the future.
I am, because you know what I've got? I've got outlets that have USB ports on it.
Nice.
All right. Do we have any other futuristic things we need to talk about?
The Peldor Joy Festival.
Yes. So I've
is
done
coming
some,
up.
I've done some calculations. I've asked some questions. And it seems that I need 20 cans for the 2E tournament, plus one can for every mission I expect to attempt.
For each attempt or for each mission?
Attempt.
Oh, see, that's a bit of a fluctuation.
Yes. Also, the Tribbles tournament, if we do that as well, there's another 20 cans plus one can, because there's apparently one rule that you can break per game. Yeah, so that's 41.
Oh, yeah.
Plus
reset
X.
The Tribbles.
Yeah.
If you go to Costco.
Yeah, Costco.
And get some flats.
I was thinking about Amazon Prime, actually.
Oh, there you go.
No, there was a very nice list posted by Faithful Reader, I believe, about what pantries are looking for, and I did another Google search of what good stuff is, and it's things like tuna and olive oil was a good one on the list, like meaty soups and a good list. So
cool.
I will. I do not know if I'm going to completely plan to break all the rules in every round, but I will certainly prepare my deck such that I can break them. I'm looking forward to it because it's going to be a second edition tournament. I got all the sets printed out. Look okay for some reason. All my cards printed out just a shade blue. I don't know why. Just comparing them to the real. I got this new printer and I'm very excited about it. But the prints look great. They're nice and dark. But everything's just a tad on the blue side. I don't know why. So
Debbie messing with it?
Funny. I've got if I print on regular paper, it looks a lot more closer to the actual gray, but it's still just a shade blue. I don't think it's the actual file, but certainly compared to this pile of 2E cards I got on my desk, which are very very warm compared to that, I'm a little disappointed. So I'll see if I can figure out exactly what it is. But it's nice. It's on. On the label paper. So if this works out, then you know, let me know what you want, and we'll go
Ooh.
To town.
Yeah,
yeah. This should make things nice and easy. I printed out. I figured this set has four pages of actual cards, or is it five pages? And so I printed one page of the first page. You know, tweaked a little setting. Printed a second page, tweaked a setting. Printed a third page, and just went through the entire file until I have three pages of each, because that's what you need for a playset, right?
Sure.
And just made notes on what I did every time. A couple of pages look really good, but they're still bluish. There's a few settings that allow you to shift the color palette, but they're much too. They let you shift the color palette and not drop down like a certain level. So I'm wondering if I need to just. I'd hate to have to open the thing in Photoshop and manually make changes to it, but. Like I said, I put in a customer service request, and they wrote back to me and asked me a bunch of questions that I. Don't know the answers to, so I'm going to try again. One of the questions is, so what are you trying to print? And I'm like, well,
go to this website.
Yeah.
Download these PDFs.
Yeah. I think the biggest answer is printing on a regular piece of paper looks a lot better than printing on this glossy paper. So it may just be a paper setting that I need to figure out. And glossy is not one of the ones on the list. I could do like coated or thick or transparency, but not glossy. So maybe they'll give me some hints there. If for some reason you in the past have printed and your cards came out blue and you made a small adjustment and then it came out the right color again, would you kindly send an email to section31 at danhammond.com and help me out, and I will be much obliged. Other than printing cards for the tournament in 2 weeks and preparing for a big holiday dinner this weekend, where we've got another episode of the animated series to watch for next week, an episode called The Practical Jerker. Joker.
Wow. Oh, good Look, night, everybody.
It's not my fault, because as I was talking, I clicked on the link to Memory Alpha, and there's a picture of Captain Kirk with a, his on the back of his shirt says, Kirk is a jerk. So that went right into my head.
Well, somebody would be a practical jerker then.
Yes, that is practical and a jerk. All right, I think I'm done. I've said enough. I've said too much.
All right. Well, we'll have Geekmas this weekend. I think hopefully get some tribbles in, maybe, at least off to one side if we can. If not, I will be going to Disneyland tomorrow to hopefully check out all the Season of the Force stuff. So come back with some Star Wars news.
That is excellent. I will be taking a trip mid-January, so I'm looking forward to hearing all about it.
And I may or may not be available for recording next week because I will be in L.A. at the red carpet premiere of The Force Awakens.
What?
Yes. They are... Lucasfilm contacted our local Garrison, Southern California Garrison, to see if anybody had The Force Awakens costumes yet. And about a half dozen of us were like, yeah. Or more to the point, half dozen other people were like, yeah. And then somebody pointed at me because I was the only Poe, thanks to us foolishly trying to do a Poe costume for Comic-Con. And so it sounds like we're going to get to go. I don't know. I seriously doubt that we'll be seeing the movie. They haven't really said that, but we'll get to go and be at the red carpet, take pictures with anybody who wants to come and take pictures with us. So fingers crossed that Oscar Isaac is a big fanboy.
Neat.
But I think, you know, John Boyega is totally.
Yeah.
So I think he would. I'm hoping some of those guys will be interested in stopping and take some pictures with costume folks. So, that should be really entertaining.
If you are otherwise indisposed a week from today, I will understand, and perhaps we'll record on Tuesday, and you can tell us all about it.
That sounds like a plan.
All right, very good. Then, until then.
All right. In the meantime, I am Sir Rogue.
And I am Sir Dan.
And I will remind you all to expand your BEM in the universe.
Yeah. I will disassemble and draw multiple cards.
No disassemble.
Run, you cannot hide, and you cannot defect. They are always a